The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
You're listening to Wrestling to the Max.
Alert, alert, clear all channels.
This is an exclusive.
How you like that?
Gary Vaughn, Sean Garmer, and Paul Leeser.
You could get high or you could get low. You could stay young or you could grow old. Let it go. Cause I'm a go for broke. You could go hard or you could go home. You could live life or you could...
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the combo package of the night. That's right, Wrestling Unwrapped to the Max is back, and we are here all together once again. I know it's been a while, but we are having a special show. Our producer and the guy that usually is here for all these shows is not here tonight. We've tried to contact him, but I think he passed out during a certain Randy Orton match, so we're still concerned. We're trying to get a hold of him, but that could have been the reason why we don't have him on this show. I honestly don't know why, but here we are.
It was too short for him to pass out during.
Quit stealing my thunder, guys.
But it doesn't take long for Randy Orton to put anybody to sleep, if you ask me. I am your host, Gary Vaughn, tonight, and of course, with me is Paul Leeser.
Heyo.
And, of course, we are from the Wrestling of the Max crew. But what is tonight is something really cool, and they are joining us, the guys from Wrestling Unwrapped, Mr. Harry Broadhurst.
What's up, Gary?
Hey, and Mr. Patrick Ketza.
Because we didn't want to be up until 4 a.m. doing this.
True story.
100% accurate.
Yes, exactly. And I want to mention one thing before we kick off talking about this SummerSlam. I want to mention these three guys that are joining me tonight did a very awesome thing, and that is, of course, breaking down the bracketology of the Mae Young Classic. You can go listen to that now. Well, maybe not now. Listen to the SummerSlam show, then go check it out. But anyway, they did a great job. Make sure you go check it out. It is, of course, on the W2Mnet.com. And, of course, wherever you find podcasts on the W2M Network. So make sure you do go join us and subscribe, rate, and review. Because if you do, you'll get that awesome show. I'm really looking forward to listening to it myself. But, yeah, guys, tonight we are here for SummerSlam. I am ready to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly, and everything involved. So let's get this thing kicked off. And let's go ahead and start out with the pre-show stuff. And we'll start out with talking about the Miztourage taking on the Hardy Boys and Jason Jordan. Yeah, there you go, Harry. I mean, this is a match that we weren't sure, you know, if really honestly the Miztourage was going to do anything, because Jason Jordan, the golden child, and the Hardys are loved by the crowd. But what crowd was there? I got a chance to see Miztourage actually take the victory. What did you think, man?
We're doing Raw matches too? Okay, then.
Oh, I thought your name was by it.
No, that's the SmackDown Tag Team titles, but it's okay.
No, go ahead, Harry. Tell me what you think about the Miztourage.
I think they did these guys a disservice by having it so early in the pre-show, because not a whole lot of the crowd was there, and therefore there weren't a whole lot of reactions, which, given at least three of the six men in this contest being the Hardy Boys and the Miz, you'd expect better crowd reactions for. The match was kind of just there, though.
Yeah, it was just kind of there. Paul, I mean, I know me and you discussed this on the regular Raw show, and we kind of, you know, go back and forth on this, because the Miztourage is something we really enjoy, because we love the Miz, plain and simple. And the Hardy Boys and Jason Jordan, you know, that was just basically a matchup because they had nothing for the Hardy Boys.
Yeah, and we talked about how much we thought the Miz has sort of been downplayed and kind of mistreated a little bit in the recent leaks leading up to this, and sort of, I guess, the downsides of what's been going on with the whole Jason Jordan saga as well. But, I mean, this was done in front of maybe 300 people and maybe up to 500 as they cycled in. Like, this is, I agree with Harry. This was done way too early. And they didn't do anything overly exciting. It's very, as Patrick pointed out, what I said in the chat, very cookie cutter, even though I started saying it was a waste of time before we started air. So it was what it was. Miz gets a nice pin on Jason Jordan after his skull-crushing finale in a bit of a misdirection sort of deal to get the victory and bring some sort of intrigue to Raw the next night. So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I agree with that comment too. And you know, here's the thing, guys, just to let everybody know listening, the reason we're kind of going by piece and assigning different guys to different matches is because simply we'd be here all night long if all four of us really just gave all our thoughts on every match. We are going to chime in when we want to, but each guy is going to take a different match and kind of give you his thoughts. And then, hey, you know, if one of us disagrees or just has a certain point of view that we, you know, want to share, we're going to do it, but we are not going to spend all night with all four of us going over each match. It's just not going to happen on a big card like this. So that's why I was a little confused, man.
Especially when you also consider the fact that there's currently 9 titles on the main roster. Miz is the only one that didn't defend.
Yeah. The Intercontinental title. Yeah, it definitely is, man. The Intercontinental title is one that, you know, it's supposed to be prestigious, but yeah, not defended in the show. Kind of odd.
I fully expect Miz to pitch a massive bitch about this tomorrow night on Raw, though. About the fact that not only was his title not defended on the show, but he also beat Kurt's son at the show to kind of really stick the point home.
I'd be fine
and not even
thing.
On the show.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'd be really okay with that just because Miz needs some fire behind him after, I think, all the lead, like, they fed him to Brock and then sort of looked silly in the coming weeks after this. So I think a nice angry Miz promo is just what the doctor ordered at this point.
I can't wait. I want to see it. I can't wait for Kurt Angle to get involved and things to go haywire with that. So that will be definitely a viewing point for Raw tomorrow. Make sure we tune in for that. Let's talk about the Cruiserweight title. Neville took on Akira Tozawa, the champion at the time, and they had a little match here that, you know, it was pretty decent, Paul. Neville did walk away the champion, though. Akira Tozawa's reign was very short.
Yeah, and as much as I really wanted Akira Tozawa to get a good long run with the championship, I kind of see the point of this is that they didn't want to basically do to Tozawa what they did with Austin Aries, where they just had him lose every single time. So Tozawa does at least keep the one win, even though the title reign essentially means nothing. And they have all these baby faces they built up over on 205 Live to challenge Neville. So I assume that's where they'll keep going after this is all done, because I would assume Tozawa is going to get another match at some point. But this was overall very good.
That leads to my question to you then, because this is the thought that I had out of there. If they're going to put the title back onto Neville right now, who is Neville's next challenger once if he does polish off Tozawa and manage to keep the title? Who would you have next for him? Because I had Tozawa being the guy to flip over the division to having a face champion and having the heels start to challenge for the belt. Drew Gulak, Tony Nese, Arya Daivari, for example, because Arya's been getting some main event play on 205 Live recently as well.
It's very true. And if this were maybe a month ago, Mustafa Ali and Cedric Alexander were both looking pretty strong going into this. And Mustafa, at least since the Drew Gulak feud has ended, hasn't really been getting a whole lot going for him. He's been losing a lot more often, so maybe the shine is off that one. But I would think Cedric would be somewhere in the next lineup in the wings, at least, because he does keep winning, at least, as opposed to Mustafa.
Yeah, I'm really excited about seeing what's going to happen next with that group of guys you guys are mentioning, because of the fact that they have built them, but yet we're, you know, not seeing a whole lot. Hopefully once we get past this whole thing with Akira Tozawa and Neville, we'll finally get to see some different matchups and things that will really get us going with the Cruiserweights again. I love Akira Tozawa. I love Titus Worldwide and all that stuff, but I think this feud can only handle so much, so we'll see from the future. Let's move on, though, and let's talk about the tag titles over there on SmackDown. And the New Day walk in as the champs taking on the Usos. And this one was actually kind of interesting here, Harry. I think that the Usos got in a lot of offense. The New Day did their thing and did it pretty well. But, I mean, in the end, a series of events here at the end where the Usos getting the victory, to me, it kind of amped up the end.
It seemed a little odd that I'm watching a WWE pay-per-view and a super kick party breaks out.
Yeah, that's the truth.
But as far as the match itself goes, I really enjoyed the match. I don't think it was quite to the level of their encounter at Money in the Bank, because their match at Money in the Bank stole the entire show. Despite the fact that they went on first at Money in the Bank, it still stole the entire show at that particular pay-per-view. I don't think this match was quite up to that level, but this was still really, really good. And I'm also curious as to where they're going to go with the Usos as champions once again, because it looked like they were kind of setting up the New Day in order to cycle in the next set of competitors for the heel side of SmackDown in order to get some opportunities with the title chances now that the belts were off of the heel New Day. Or off of the heel Usos, excuse me. But it'll be easy for me to say. All right, try this again. I was expecting that we were going to start to see some more fresh blood on the heel side of the SmackDown Tag Division. There had been rumors of possibly doing more with the Ascension now that their stuff with Breezango is getting over so well inside of the Fashion File segments and stuff. And there was also talk of a repairing of Luke Harper and Eric Rowan as well, and re-entering them into the tag team title division over on SmackDown 2. But now that the belts are back on the Usos, we're kind of right back where we started and looking for babyface challengers for them.
Yeah, and I mean, you had kind of the rumors that with their loss on Saturday night of the AOP possibly coming up to SmackDown. So this just seems like a really weird situation as to, you know, is this just a means to get another match and another title change out of this? And are they going to treat the Usos and New Day like Sasha and Charlotte treated the Raw women's title? Are they just going to keep trading off until someone's built up enough to take over?
As far as your thought about the AOP goes, I think the AOP ends up being the team behind the attack on the Fashion Police.
I would agree.
I really like the thought of New Day and Usos trading, just because there is not really a whole lot going on the SmackDown tag team side, and that's kind of what I figured was going to be happening. I figured the New Day would retain here, of course, but I thought that the feud would just keep on going for maybe another pay-per-view. But this seems like it might go much longer now with the title change here.
Paul, do you think it would be crazy to bring back Harper and Rowan as faces to face the Usos once again? Because we've seen that those two teams have excellent chemistry based on their matches back in 2015 over the tag titles.
They also had great matches. Thank you, Harper. Yeah, they had some good matches in NXT as well. So early days of NXT. But needless to say, I don't know. Like, they seem very not wanting to do that, just because of the history they had of the whole breakup and the matches that led to between Luke and Eric and Luke and Bray and all that. So I don't know if they'd be so quick to renege on that before, but this is WWE and they have done that before. I would be fine seeing them again. I thought they were a great tag team. I thought they really complemented each other very well. So I would have no problem if they wanted to do that again. I question the likelihood more than anything, especially if they weren't the ones attacking the Fashion Police, because I felt like they would have been perfect.
Likewise.
Yeah, that was really my thought coming into this, and after this weekend, it just kind of totally scrapped those ideas, because I was really hoping it was Harper and Rowan, because I just think both those guys have been put in a place where, you're in purgatory. We don't know where you're at. You don't know where you're at. Let's just, hope eventually you go up or down. I don't know which one. And, that's exciting if they do get back together. But, with AOP possibly most likely being the guys that will be taking on Breezango, I don't know. We're still kind of hoping and dreaming right now. Well, that pretty much concludes, the pre-show part of the show. But now let's talk about the main portion. And, of course, the show was started off by John Cena's music hitting, and he comes out to the ring. And then the next thing you know, Baron Corbin comes out, and they get it on. And they take on a pretty, okay match. I think John Cena, Patrick kind of put Baron Corbin in some good places. But in the end, John Cena was victorious.
Who did Baron Corbin piss off? Because, Cena may have put him in good places, but I never once felt that there was even a remote chance of Baron Corbin winning. And then it's SummerSlam, it's supposed to feel special, and yet Cena wins via a single AA in no even attempt at a kick out. I just, the entire thing felt weird as hell.
It felt like you were watching a Mattel match. Like, this is literally some 9-year-old kid playing with his toy ring is what I felt like the whole time.
Literally a 9-year-old kid, because Cena wins, and it's like, what a week Baron Corbin's had.
LOL.
Cashes in, yeah. Cashes in, looks like a complete idiot, you know, on Tuesday, and then goes to Brooklyn and really doesn't look any better. I just, wow.
Well, let's not also forget the kind of character assassination that happened courtesy of the commentary table during the early portion of this match as well. When Cena rolled out of the ring to the floor and looked over at Bradshaw and said, "You can see clear as day, this kid's shook."
And then Cena proceeded to put on JBL's hat. Why? Because obviously Cena really didn't give a damn.
And apparently, neither does SmackDown Creative.
I mean, has he really demonstrated anything to you that makes you think he should have successfully cashed in or even had a chance to look like he mattered against John Cena?
You know what? Honestly, if you were asking me this question about when the brand split originally happened, I would say absolutely yes. Mm-hmm. Over the course of what's come out over the recent weeks with regards to the whole beef with the whole military veteran on Twitter, which I know got him crap from Vince, if I'm not mistaken, that's actually the big thing that got him into the doghouse. Not to mention his constant jaw-jacking with fans on Twitter as well. They're supposed to have social media. They're supposed to have social media to have an interactive presence to promote the WWE product, not to kind of go into business for themselves going after fans on Twitter. And that's what I understand has Corbin in the doghouse right now, if the rumors that I've read are true. So, yeah, it's like Patrick said, at no point did I ever feel that Cena was in danger in this match.
Yeah, you know, he may not have really been in danger. I do think that the positive thing is John Cena seemed to try to make Baron Corbin look strong in this match. Now, you know, it was pretty much mailed in that he wasn't going to win, but I think that that's at least a little bit of positive coming out of this, that Baron Corbin wasn't just straight up squashed. So I'm happy with that. But yeah, the doghouse.
That showbreaker looked nice.
Yeah, it did. You're right. So, I mean, you know, there's good stuff. At least Baron Corbin has that little piece to hold on to. Let's talk about another match that, you know, was kind of a surprise, maybe, or maybe not. I don't know, for most people. But that is, of course, a SmackDown Women's Championship match between Natalya and Naomi. And Naomi, you know, came into this, and I thought she was really going to be the stronger one. But Natalya got so much offense and did a lot more than I ever expected. And, of course, Naomi got a little hot there at the end. But it was Natalya who actually found a way to get Naomi to submit, you know. So it's, you know, took more than one time. But, Patrick, we have Natalya as the new women's champion over there on SmackDown.
And it was about this point I asked, what the hell is going on with this show? Not a bad match by any stretch of the imagination, but I think the biggest surprise that I had, even over Natalya winning, is the fact that Carmella was nowhere to be found. Like, at all. That, I think, was the bigger shock here. I mean, I'm not huge on Natalya winning, but at the same time, it was not a bad match. Definitely wasn't the best women's match in a weekend. No, I'm not going to gripe about it. Shut up, Harry. But it was not a bad match by any means. And, I mean, I'm okay with the new champion. It means they take the glow sticks off the belt, but it just felt weird.
Maybe Carmella read the bit about your line cutting you mentioned the other day while we were watching TakeOver.
Go to hell.
Don't get him started.
Hang on. At least Carmella busted her ass and did it the right way. Now shut up.
Don't get him started again. God, I had a rat. I had a wrestling show yesterday. I come home to 15 minutes of Patrick bitching in the wrestling chat.
Oh, man. What a Jesus. Thing to look at. Patrick, you said, where's Carmella? And I kind of asked that same question myself. I really honestly, coming into this, I thought, okay, cash-in's imminent. It didn't happen. But what I do think is she was probably trying out for that KFC commercial, so she just didn't have time. You know, she was just a little busy. So that's what's going on with Carmella, probably.
Can I add one extra thing?
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, because of the fact that they were back to back, I almost thought for half a second, outside chance that Carmella cashes in on the Raw women's belt. Hence why women's Money in the Bank doesn't have a color.
Interesting thought. I don't know. They seem pretty intent, I think, on keeping on SmackDown. During the pre-show, Carmella is pretty focused on what's going on with Naomi and Natalya. Although she did mention the Raw Women's match, so. But she said they better be grateful to a degree because, you know, she could only cash in on the SmackDown or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was like a half a second thought of nowhere to be found. Does she show up at Raw kind of thing? But no.
Yeah, you know, it would have been fun, but, you know, if they do have that rule in place, I get it, and it kind of makes sense, but still, I think it would have been neat to see her jump in the ring and, you know, take it away from Sasha Banks. I think it would have been kind of funny. But, let's talk about, you know, the fact that we had Big Cass taking on Big Show on this match, in this show, and I honestly, we got the fun thing of seeing, you know, Enzo Amore hung above the, you know, the ring and the shark cage and all that good stuff. And of course him, you know, chirping like a little birdie, I guess, cause he kept yelling down a Big Show and I heard it the entire match. And I was just kind of getting tired of that a little bit, honestly. But you know, that's what I expected. Big Cass and Big Show do their thing here. You know, Big Cass of course is going to take advantage of that messed up, you know, was it fractured hand of Big Show's? But anyway, he focused on that, you know, really came out trying to look, you know, pretty strong, which he did. I think this match was interesting for a little bit, but honestly, for the most part, I just kind of found myself not really caring. They try to really pop you by having Enzo Amore grease up and squeeze out of the shark cage and, you know, jump down. And the first thing that happens, though, guess what? He is kicked by Big Cass. Big Show gets 1-2. Doesn't take long. 1-2-3. Big Cass comes out of this looking like, you know, the biggest guy in the room. I don't know, Paul. I just, this was okay. But it just seems like Enzo Amore never gets anything.
I think that's kind of the point, at least right now, because, one, they seem very big on Big Cass, wanting him to look strong at every possible moment, all these other things. And he does dominate a majority of this match, and this played out pretty much exactly how I pictured it, almost. So, for me, it was a little on the dull side. Enzo's antics were either annoying or very funny. I got a good chuckle out of the greasing up thing, honestly, but... this was what it was always going to be, and that's a showcase for Big Cass. I kind of wish it was a little shorter, but other than that, I think that's my only real complaint.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you. I just did not really have a lot invested, I guess, and not only that, it being what you said, it's something you expected. Well, you walk away looking at these other matches, at least they did a few things in the prior matches that, you know, you may not have expected. This was one that needed something that was different. It really, really did. So, it's one of those kind of bummer ones, but it is what it is. I will say this, though. If Enzo Amore is not in the doghouse, just like Baron Corbin, they just do not care about him. He doesn't get any kind of good thing coming from his career at this moment, so... let's talk about something else that was kind of disappointing. Randy Orton defeating Rusev, and it was not much of a match. It was just one RKO, Harry. So, I mean, you get a chance to talk about this, Harry. You were so lucky.
I got six words for you, Gary. You ready?
Do it.
Future Global Force Wrestling Champion Rusev.
You're not wrong, probably.
The rumors are Rusev asked for his release, and if he did, thank God, because frankly, this company has no clue what the hell to do with him. Dude is super charismatic. He's a decent worker. And there's heat on him because of his wife. And, I mean, he's kind of found himself in a Mark Murrow situation there where there's heat on him because of his wife. But at the same time, though, Rusev is a significantly better worker than Murrow ever was. The dude has charisma out of his yang. It's just – it's unfortunate that they couldn't find anything better for Rusev to be doing other than being thrown right back into the xenophobic Bulgarian shtick that he was running before that they have going on higher up on the SmackDown card with Jinder Mahal right now.
It makes me wish that Southpaw was a legit thing and he could be Big Bartholomew. Seriously, WWE, I will pay $14.99 for one legit Southpaw show.
Do you guys remember the wrestling episode of South Park?
Yes.
Rusev would have been WWF champion on that.
I mean, working with Randy does nobody any favors, I think, at this point right now. Randy is just so boring. He doesn't care. You see it. And, I mean, if this was longer than an RKO than what we got here, I mean, I can only imagine how bored I would have been going into the next match.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. You know, here's the thing. I mean, I get it. You know, Rusev is not doing much, and they're not really, you know, thrilled about him. But still, there is that talent, and I kind of think it's a shame to see it being wasted. And I guess it won't be wasted if he does go to GFW. But it's really going to mean that Lana's going to be making, you know, quite a bit more money than he is, and I guess that's okay, you know, just have to get over it. So,
well, I would assume either GFW or New Japan. That just didn't fit with my six words reference.
I don't know. Do you really think Rusev really fits in New Japan, though? That's kind of a weird kind of thought.
I do, actually, because I feel like Rusev actually has the in-ring chops to back up that kind of schedule. In addition, I feel like he also can he also has the kind of character and charisma that would naturally translate even over there to the Japanese fan base as well. That, granted, they tend to focus more on the in-ring side there, but then you've seen people like Juice Robinson come over and get their characters over as a character before they became known for their in-ring work.
Rusev's got that build that would work very well over there, too. Short and stocky. He does like to kick a lot, and that's kind of handy in the modern age, at least of Puro. So I think he'd be fine. I think he would have been another nice nod for Ring of Honor as well, just because that crossover appeal is there. But this is even if he continues wrestling. I don't know exactly how committed, I guess, he is to keep going if WWE is not going to work out for him.
Yeah, and if he retires, maybe Randy Orton will say, hey, that's a good idea. I'm going to do it, too.
Yeah, so, I can only hope.
I know. That was my hope,
especially
too.
If it keeps ending up being this unmotivated Orton.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, we've spent so much time on this. It's way more than I ever thought we would. But, yeah, there you go. Randy Orton wins again. Let's talk about... Huh?
We gave that match more time than the WWE did tonight.
Yeah. They owe us money now. Let's talk about something that we probably do care a lot more about, and of course is the Raw Women's title. And this is a matchup between Alexa Bliss and Sasha Banks. And this is, you know, one of those matches that you were kind of curious. Were they going to give them the time? Were they going to put the effort into it? Or was this going to be something really special? And, you know, this is, you know, kind of, you know, cool. You get Sasha Banks becoming your next women's champion. But, you know, there was a lot of aggression in this match, Paul. I think I appreciated a lot of the different things that happened in the match. What did you think about it?
I thought their match from Great Balls of Fire was better, personally. Not just because I was there, but, like, they seemed much more motivated to keep, you know, whatever they had going then. And this is, it's them, I don't want to say going through the motions, because there are some nice spots here and there. But it does feel like that, and the finish felt very lackadaisical to me. But, I mean, Sasha is your new champion. There's some intrigue now, I guess, with Bayley, depending, I guess, on how you read the segment before this. And I'm sure Alexa's going to be gunning for a rematch. And this almost seems tailor-made for Nia to be the next women's champion. Like, this is almost just a paper champion situation.
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, Nia Jax has been waiting quite a while for that.
assuming Nia can stop hurting people, sure.
Yeah. It doesn't seem to have affected their opinion of her so far.
Yeah. That's because she's so damn good on her Instagram.
She is The Rock's cousin.
I'm sorry.
Besides that, but she's damn good on her Instagram, and that's why she still has the following she does.
The near murder of Charlotte, the injuring of Bayley, these are two women who are very secure in their in-ring abilities there. So clearly they're not the ones getting themselves hurt. Patrick likes to give Miz crap for not being in the right place at times for his stuff there. He's got to have the same knock on Nia there.
Not to
maybe the same degree, but yeah, Nia is definitely. No one can not make the claim. I told you guys I was going to end up roped into this somehow. You can't not make the claim that Nia was called up way too early. It just sucks because she can be very good. But it's just the placement that she was put in where she's pushed to the moon so quickly and she's not.
Yeah, she's not ready, basically, is I think a summation of a lot of her stuff. Even in NXT, she got pushed pretty quickly to the women's title scene, and that didn't necessarily pan out all that well, but, I mean, she's here, and they still seem like they want her to be the champion at some point. Whether that happens sooner or later now, I don't know, because of the injuries that Harry was mentioning, but it feels like it's going to be soon, just because they never seem to really commit to Sasha either, and that's, I mean, maybe this is the time they do that, but I feel like they want to keep the division fluid.
Also, the fact of NXT thing, she was pushed into the title match because the rest of the Four Horsewomen were gone. And basically, they had no other women's roster aside from Bayley and Nia until Asuka got there.
Right.
Can I make a request for the next Raw Women's Champion? To pay tribute to my reaction co-host, Tony? No. I want hot-ass evil Emma as the Raw Women's Champion.
I'm game. I'm game for that right now. Let's do it.
I don't think anybody who's at the Raw every week would feel the same, but who knows?
America. I mean Australia.
Oh, man, if we could only go down under on that. But anyway, let's... sorry, I had to throw that in there. Let's go ahead and move on to another thing before I get in trouble. Let's talk about, you know, Finn Balor and Bray Wyatt having their mystical dark match that they were going to have. You know, this is one, you know, that I was kind of interested in for the fact that I knew we were going to have a great entrance for the Demon King, Finn Balor. We also knew that we were going to have the opportunity to have, you know, Bray Wyatt and trying to get back on track with his thing and seeing what we can get out of these two guys. And I think they had a decent match here. They had some back and forth. I think that they gave both guys equal opportunities. Finn Balor does win, which I fully expected. I don't think this match was a blowaway match or anything, but, I mean, what did you think, Paul?
This was very, very run-of-the-mill, if you ask me. The demon stuff was the demon stuff, and I've been struggling, if you listen to our Raw reviews, to really connect to Finn again, because it feels like they've dropped the ball with him, and this is a guy with so much talent and so much, I think, all the right stuff to really become something big here, and they haven't really capitalized on it since his return, and this is more the same, even though this felt like they wanted it to be a big deal, and the crowd certainly reacted to the entrance. I don't think they could have given two shits about the match, and eventually I really didn't either. Like, this is very run-of-the-mill, if you ask me. But the right guy wins. Hopefully Finn can move on to something much more interesting than this.
Yeah, I totally agree. I want Finn Balor to do more. I really hope that this is not going to be anything where he's stuck in this whole situation with Bray Wyatt very much longer. Hopefully this is the finale. I know they probably will still do something, but I just, the Demon King is so special, and it's something that I really... I want to keep, in a great place. I don't want to overuse it. I don't want them to make it something where it's just old hat. So let's hope that they do something bigger and badder the next time he comes out. But Finn Balor, I just want to see him move up the ladder and not stay in this purgatory that he's stuck in himself. So let's talk about another Raw match. Let's talk about Dean Ambrose and, of course, Seth Rollins, the S.H.I.E.L.D. members, if you will say, or at least the former S.H.I.E.L.D. members, taking on the Raw tag title holders, Sheamus and Cesaro. And this is one, Paul, that, I mean, you, of course, I think had a few opinions about, but, I mean, I don't know, man. I kind of was okay with Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins taking this match on and winning. How did you feel about it all?
I mean, what we got here was very, very good, and it felt like, you know, Cesaro could have been brought, you know, walked away from the building on a bunch of fans' shoulders after running out into the crowd and tearing up that beach ball, which, I mean, our chat went crazy about too. So I thought this was very, very good. I don't necessarily have a large problem with Dean and Seth, especially if they're just sort of playing the long game until one of them turns on each other again. But, I mean, I can't say that the tag team division didn't need this. It's a very hot team. It's a team I think people are going to get behind. And, yeah, I mean, we'll see what else they can muster up here, too. But, I mean, them and the Hardys could be fun if they decide to do that down the road. But it feels like this stuff with Cesaro and Sheamus is just going to keep on going.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think it's going to keep on rolling and doing their thing.
Just real quick here, to verify what you guys were saying about the chat during when Cesaro went into the crowd there, I do believe the exact words that I used to describe the people that Cesaro upset there were disrespectful pricks. So frankly, in the long game here, Cesaro and the rest of wrestling viewership won. Those idiots, zero.
And I think one extra factoid that you guys are kind of overlooking is because of the title change here tonight, Dean Ambrose actually becomes a modern WWE Grand Slam champion, having held the U.S. title, IC title, the WWE World Championship, and now a tag team championship. First S.H.I.E.L.D. member to do it.
Wow, that's kind of cool. I didn't.
That can't be right.
He would have been the last Triple Crown winner.
Seth and Roman don't have an Intercontinental Championship.
That's true.
Well, alrighty then.
Yeah, there you go. Touche. And that means that Dean and Renee will be at Denny's later tonight. So that's awesome. Great. Celebrating that Grand Slam, baby. I hope they do. So.
Hey, don't knock a Grand Slam. It's awesome.
I know. That's why I'm giving them credit. I hope, heck, I'd take them out for it if they live closer. And I'll offer it now. If you want, guys want to go, just call me up.
I never thought I'd utter these words. I miss Sean.
Wow. Wow. Okay, hey, Harry is no longer invited to Denny's with us.
That would require me to go to Texas. I'm good, thanks.
I can see if Heart of Shimmer champion Chess McKenzie's in town. She loves Denny's.
Yeah, see? At least Patrick's positive about this. Well, let's talk about something else that I'm really curious if Patrick's positive about. And that is AJ Styles taking on Kevin Owens, with, of course, Shane McMahon as the guest referee. And we get a lot of the antics that we expect. They gave you tons of previews on SmackDown Live this past couple weeks. But now you finally get the matchup, of course. You know, both AJ and Kevin Owens get a little bit in the mix up with Shane McMahon there. And he, you know, does a few things with him. He shoves both guys, almost getting the magic pulled for both of them. But this is full of action, Patrick. I mean, full of interesting, fun stuff. But in the end, you do have AJ Styles staying your United States champion.
The streak dies with this match. We were 5-for-5 on title matches featuring a title change, and it ended here. I would dare say the best of their matches, because I thought this was actually a very good match. I got what I expected with Shane, and I don't think it really took away from the match, I think because everyone kind of went in expecting it. Kevin Owens may have had the line of the night, though. You can fall off the top of a building and get right back up. You can't count to three.
I love it.
Kevin Owens is a master of crap talking on paper. It's amazing. I do think that this may end up leading to eventually Hell in a Cell with Kevin Owens versus Shane, in which Kevin Owens may very well kill Shane. I'm not saying definitely, but I'm saying I think that maybe where it's heading. And I was okay with this match. I thought it was actually very good.
I would say that if I had to venture a guess, I'd say Last Man Standing or something along those lines is much more likely.
It could just be straight up one-on-one. I don't know. I mean, Hell in a Cell is sort of Shane's gimmick, though, so I wouldn't be shocked if that's where this goes.
Hence, you could fall off a tall building and pop right back up.
Well, my big thing to that, though, is that I don't necessarily know that that would necessitate a Hell in a Cell match. And just as importantly to me is, in regards to Paul's statement there about it being a straight-up one-on-one match, I don't think Shane's capable of having a straight-up one-on-one match without having some kind of assistance from the Implements of Destruction around ringside in order to help substantiate said match.
They pulled it off very well at WrestleMania.
In Orlando.
Yeah.
Yeah, Orlando.
I will have you know that there were quite a few things added to that match in Orlando once the referee got knocked on his ass, too, though.
Not saying
still a
that's
a standard match.
Yeah, and it could happen during theirs, too. I'm just saying it still was still booked as a straight up one on one match.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I think there's still positives coming out of that. I think Shane McMahon getting back in the ring is not a terrible thing, and you know, taking on Kevin Owens by himself. I mean, I'm up for that, or even if he had that triple threat, I don't care. I think it'd be good storytelling. I've kind of enjoyed what they've done here with him. So just like Patrick talked about, in the match, really, Shane was not overwhelming. He didn't really, you know, make it so much of a factor to cause, you know, either guy to lose or win. I appreciated it. I thought it was a good deal. And now, you know, AJ Styles can stay the U.S. champion and Kevin Owens can go do his own thing, which that'll make me okay. And I'm happy about it.
I will say real quick, as long as Shane's not facing Roman Reigns, we're good.
Yeah. Oh boy. That would be, yeah. But yeah, let's talk about Jinder Mahal. Yeah, that's right. The SmackDown Live WWE champion taking on Shinsuke Nakamura. And of course, like, you know, most pay-per-views that Nakamura is a part of, he gets his own violinist there live and in person. So that's kind of cool. But we have a fun match here, I think, for the most part. You know, Shinsuke Nakamura is, you know, taking control for a lot of this, and then the next thing you know, the Singh brothers get involved and help out, and, you know, Jinder Mahal gets the victory. Big surprise, Harry.
I don't think I can actually say the words that I uttered once that three count went down when I was watching this live. The first two parts of those three words were, what the... You can probably fill in the third on your own.
Probably so.
You know what? It's not even that I have anything against Jinder, because I don't. It's clear as day you can see the guy has been busting his ass to try to improve his game since he's become the champion and since he's been entrusted with the opportunity that he's been giving. That being said, I think that there is so much of the fan base right now that was looking forward to seeing the birth of the Nakamura dynasty and seeing what a guy like Shinsuke could do with a run on top of SmackDown and who he would be able to step into matches with while he was on top of SmackDown, that having having Mahal retain the title tonight just seems kind of counterproductive in the long run.
Patrick, you got anything before I leap in?
What the hell is going on with this pay-per-view?
I figured that was coming.
Like, I mean, it wasn't even the fact... It really wasn't even the fact that Jinder won. It was the fact that they interfere and he wins. The Singh brothers interfere and he wins. Just immediately in the last 20 seconds of the match. It's just like all of a sudden, boom, it happened. Now, you could make the argument that it was meant to be done that way, but it just, the whole thing felt really weird, which is kind of becoming a common theme for tonight.
I would agree with you entirely on that. It was very abrupt as far as the finish went. I got nothing against gender either, but they really need to freshen up how they lay out his matches. It's same hat every time, and at least Shin seemed interested in what was going on here. But that finish, I think, really just sort of killed all of this. And it really feels like Jinder's just waiting for John Cena to come in and beat him. It really does.
At least Nakamura gave Jinder his best, and I can't believe I'm saying this, he gave him his best WWE title match on pay-per-view thus far.
Yeah, he sure did.
Because Nak gave a damn.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. Go ahead, Eric.
I will say the violinist is welcome back anytime he wants to come back.
Lee England Jr. is the man.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I have to admit, I really enjoyed his rendition, especially, you know, going off that track. I mean, that's got to be kind of a tough thing. So, yeah, definitely a good job on his part. You know, Shinsuke Nakamura, I think all of us want him to do well. I think all of us want to see him finally hold a world title at, you know, in the WWE. I just don't know when they're going to do that. It's kind of like the Jinder Mahal thing. You know, how long is it going to take before we have John Cena facing him, taking the title off him? It's that big question mark we have. I mean, are they going to wait for Ric Flair to get healthy before they can do it? Or what's going to take place here? We just don't know. But what we do know is Jinder Mahal is still your champion. And on SmackDown Live, you'll get the same comments week in and week out. You racist, all that kind of stuff, you know? So it's just cheap heat for him, and it's what it is. But outside of that, just not impressed with Mahal. And I love Canadians. So, who knows? But let's talk about this final match on SummerSlam. And this, of course, is the big dog. That's right, because we got plenty of them in this match. We got Brock Lesnar. We got Braun Strowman, Roman Reigns, and Samoa Joe all battling it out in a fatal four-way match. It didn't take long, guys, before this became a complete room of destruction. It was, you know, guys going through barricades, tables being destroyed. Heck, even Brock Lesnar got crushed by a table. Tons of stuff going on here in this match. For most part, we had various matchups, you know, all these guys kind of getting involved some way, somehow. But in the end, we do have Brock Lesnar, after getting stretchered out, and he came back, winning this matchup, and he beats Roman Reigns. And that's what the weird thing here. I thought Brock Lesnar would win, but beating Roman Reigns was not the guy. I figured Samoa Joe would be the goat here to take the fall. Patrick, what was your thoughts on all that?
You kind of talked about it off air, and it's like WWE put themselves into a corner with this one, because I took Braun, and I think a lot of people took somebody else, maybe not necessarily Braun, but took somebody Brock. But then they make the announcement, or at least Paul makes the announcement, that if Brock loses, he's done with the WWE. So it's like, okay, so he's got to win, but probably shouldn't win. And it just ended up being a complete and total mess going into the match. Thank God the match made up for it, because the match was what you expected, and it was awesome. Mm-hmm. It almost made it worth waiting, by that point, almost hours for, if you include the pre-show. You know, Braun looks like a god. Roman eats the pinfall, which I found really weird and kind of makes me question, are we going to get Brock and Roman? Because what does he have to prove now? And Joe, who I figured was going to eat it, doesn't, and actually looks good. All four guys looked very good. So, job well done.
What do you think, Paul?
I, much like Patrick, this was exactly, I think, what it needed to be. You have four big guys. You have them go out there. You have them beat the bejesus out of each other. Do all sorts of ungodly, monstrous things. Braun just tossing people around like they're, you know, basically paper mache. Roman Reigns, I think, gets his fair share of spots here, too. And I thought Joe looked very good. I think this was pretty much written on the wall after Brock Lesnar got stretchered out that he was going to come back and win. Like Patrick, I picked Braun just because I thought this, if any time would have been a good one to take the championship off of Brock, I felt like this would have been a great stage to do it on, and he can go and prepare for MMA, even though he's got till next year before he's fighting, to do so. And you could spend the rest of the time up until WrestleMania trying to figure out what you're going to do with the rest of these guys. But it looks like it's going to still be Brock and Roman at WrestleMania. And once that happens, then Brock can go off, and that's when he'll start training. Because I think the earliest they said he could fight is June. So we might be sticking around with this Brock Lesnar title lane for much, much longer.
Ugh.
Yeah, ugh.
What you got for us, Harry?
Longtime listeners of mine and Patrick's podcast know that my favorite wrestlers are guys like Chris Jericho, CM Punk, Rob Van Dam, Christopher Daniels, guys who are on the relatively smaller but more athletic side of things in the world of professional wrestling. There is just something insanely entertaining about watching Braun Strowman kill people. I do not know how to put it into words. There is no easier way for me to say it than it is fun to watch Braun Strowman kick people's ass. And this match right here was just yet another example of that, getting a chance to see Strowman toss Lesnar around like he was nothing. If Vince wasn't listening to the reactions that that was getting, and if we can't go to Strowman and Lesnar at WrestleMania instead of the dead-in-the-water Strowman-Reigns match, then something's clearly wrong with the man who claims to be in touch with the thoughts and the hopes of the WWE Universe.
Yeah, I think you're right. Excuse me. And I look at Braun Strowman as being that guy that proved tonight that he is the next big thing, that, you know, he's a force to be reckoned with, and it's not going to be long before we're talking about him in the main event picture, maybe more and more. And not only that, one of those guys that, you know, WWE kind of puts in their wheelhouse of guys they send out and to really, you know, advertise and things like that, because people do love him. They get excited to see what he can do, and he just throws things around and throws people around like it's nothing. So
I had kind of an unpopular prediction for tonight. I had Roman walking out of the four-way as champion, but I think a lot of that had to do with me buying in the hype of the three-man Shield reunion. And I had Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose coming down to the ring and kind of cementing almost a mini turn for all three and helping Roman win the WWE Championship here, but or the Universal Championship. But at the same time, though, I can't say anything bad about this match. This was pure entertainment from start to finish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the biggest positive thing I got had coming out of this whole thing, is this was such a fun match to watch, so exciting. If you didn't like this match, you obviously, you know, either were really groggy or you were in a bad mood, because otherwise, I mean, it was a great way to conclude this show. I got to say that for sure. So, but yeah, Brock Lesnar is still your Universal Champion, and so there you go. I mean, that concludes SummerSlam. That's the way they went off the air, and now we are in store for our final thoughts here. So what I'm going to do is, Harry, I want to turn it over to you and let you get our final reactions.
All right, let's bring the Monday staple here to the W2M Network. All right, here we go. Instead of breaking it up individually, having us give one thing at a time each, we're going to go ahead and everybody focus on one particular topic at once. So we're going to kick things off with our favorite match of the evening. And for me, I don't think there's any question it has to be the main event. Although honorable mention to both the SmackDown and Raw tag team title matches, because I thought both of those were excellent as well. Gary, where were you at? What's your match of the night?
I think I'm going to agree with you. It's going to be hard to say, you know, there's a better match than the final match there in the Fatal 4-Way. And my honorable mention would have to be Kevin Owens and AJ Styles. I really enjoyed that one.
Paul?
Harry, I'm right there with you. I think the main event, whoever said it, they made you worth sitting around the whole 6 hours just to get to that one was absolutely right. They put on a great show, and those tag team title matches were absolutely worth your time the whole way through.
Was Patrick able to call back in?
Yeah, he's here.
Yes, Patrick's able to call back in.
All right,
and Patrick was the one who said it.
All right, Patrick, what about you, House? What's your favorite match of the night? And then give an honorable mention, because obviously match of the night's kind of a runaway tonight.
Yeah. So we should officially just name this the SummerSlam 2017 Fatal 4-Way Honorable Match of the Night Award. Yeah, easily the Fatal 4-Way being the best match. It made it worth sitting through almost 6 hours of a show. Honorable mention for me, though, would be the U.S. title match. I thought AJ and KO had the match that they had and made it worth it in the end. So I thought it was a very enjoyable match, but it still wasn't going to touch the middle.
Yeah, I think everybody else was kind of facing an uphill battle, because I think the crowd reactions very clearly indicated in the build going into this show that the most looked forward to match was definitely that four-way. And by all means, not only did it live up to expectations, you could make the argument that it greatly exceeded them as well. How about your worst match of the night? And for the record, just because Patrick was calling me out on this earlier, you cannot count Orton and Rusev as a match for this category.
Okay.
Gary, you start.
Okay, and now I'm a little confused. What are we talking about here?
Worst match other than Orton Rusev. Match.
Okay, so I can't use... Gosh darn it, why? Okay, so...
Because it was 7 seconds. It took me longer to say that than the match lasted.
I know, you're right. My God. Okay, I'm going to say the thing that opened the entire thing off on the pre-show. I just could care less about the Mistourage and the Hardys and all that stuff with Jason Jordan. I was just kind of like, this is not fun. There's not a crowd here to watch it. I just... That would probably be the lackluster for me.
Paul. Man, I think for me, it's got to be Big Cass and Big Show. It was just boring, and really should have been a lot shorter than what it was. So I think that takes the honors for me tonight.
Patrick.
Bye-bye, Baron. We hate to see you go. I'm going to go with the opener, actually, because it just... While it was cool to hear the crowd sing along at the very beginning of John Cena's theme, that was about the only highlight of that match. And Big Match John was not Big Match John, and Baron never really had a clean shot at winning. So that was a big disappointment for me. Could have been Baron Corbin's coming out party, and it ended up being nothing. So I'm going with the opener.
Three definite viable candidates here. I'm going to give my decision and agree to the loser for the night with Paul. Big Show, Big Cass. The only entertaining.
Did you just call Paul a loser?
Man.
No. No.
It's pretty harsh.
No, for the big loser match of the night, I'm agreeing with Paul and awarding him the victory in this conversation, because I think that the only entertaining part of Big Cass versus Big Show was Little Enzo with the baby oil, and that sounds a lot worse than I meant it to.
You're going to be dreaming of him tonight oiling up, aren't you, Perry?
Oh, boy.
That or a trip to Emma's Down Under. Anyway, moving on.
Ooh, I'm joining that one.
No guests needed. All right, let's move on, shall we? Patrick, what's your overall score for tonight's episode?
The same as your jokes, 2 out of 10. No.
You know what the sad thing is I'm so used to saying episode by doing these on the reaction that I actually said episode here. What's your final score for this pay-per-view?
This was absolutely weird as hell. Like, this would be one of the weirdest pay-per-views of the year. But be that as it may, it didn't feel like a bad pay-per-view. WWE title match, the actual WWE title match, was Jinder's best on pay-per-view as far. Questionable that he won, sure, but it was still his best. Main event more than delivered. I title actually exceeded my expectations, and it more or less made up for, you know, the cookie cutter open man, the weird down women's match. I didn't think this was a bad pay-per-view. Long as hell, absolutely. I didn't think it was bad, just weird. So for weird, I'm going with 6.5.
I'm just a shade under you. I'm a 6, and the reason that I'm a 6 is that, yes, there are a couple standout bad matches. The six-man tag that Gary mentioned was completely unnecessary. I get that it was a way to shoehorn Miz and the Hardys and Jason Jordan and, I guess by proxy, the Miztourage onto the card. But when every other single title in your company is being defended tonight, you can't find something better than a meaningless throwaway six-man tag match for Miz. Something's wrong with the creative team in that aspect. The Cass and Big Show match is, frankly, intelligence insulting as a fan. Because this is a match stipulation that we have just seen 7 months prior, even though us wrestling fans aren't supposed to have memories past like 2 months. So the reuse of that stipulation with the shark cage irritated me. The match itself was nothing to write home about. Cena and Corbin was your typical Cena wins lull match, but at the same time, given where Corbin is in the WWE's doghouse right now, not really a surprise. That being said, both tag team title matches, the U.S. title match, and especially that main event, make this show worth watching. You can cherry pick what you kind of want to watch and what you don't want to watch, but I'm definitely going to say that tonight's show is a 6 for me. It's on the above average side, if just slightly. Gary,
7, real quick, 7 and 10 months ago for the Shark Cage because NXT TakeOver.
Paul Ellering, yes.
Yeah, you're not right. That whole shark cage thing was just borrowed. You know, I don't even know if it was true about the whole Enzo scared of heights, so they were using it to kind of rib him. I don't know. But, you know, to me, you know, rating this SummerSlam, it had no perfect 10. And it needed the power of love, if you ask me. So there were some things lacking in this show. There were some, you know, good moments and the main event being the best. But besides that, I kind of felt like overall, the next time I'm going to clean the house, this is the thing I'm going to put on the TV for background noise because I don't have to pay attention to it because really there's nothing really to pay attention to till the last little bit. So that's the kind of way I felt about the whole thing, and I really thought it was a disappointment. I thought they could have done a lot better here. If you're really into title changes, you love this show. I don't really care. Title changes are what they are. So didn't really impress me much, Shania Twain. So there you go. I'm going to go to a 6 out of 10 here.
I thank you for that reference.
I had to, guys. I just had to.
Man, I think the main event, if it didn't deliver such as it had, we'd be singing a very different tune about this show.
Agreed.
It does. It over-delivers, if you ask me. I think the tag team title matches, as has already been said, were fantastic. The U.S. title match, I think, was good. I enjoyed the cruiserweights as well. Everything else is either fair to Midland or just completely skippable and bad and boring and whatever other bad stuff you want to attribute to it. I think 6 is right on the money.
I just want to say that I much prefer a Fair to Midland reference to a Shania Twain reference. And that takes us to the final part of this final reaction. Paul, who's your MVP?
Oh, boy. You know, I think you look at who walks out of here with their head held tallest. Definitely Braun Strowman, right? Unbelievable performance. Definitely looks, I think, the strongest, even though Brock wins. He looks the strongest in that main event, and I don't think there's a hotter act on Raw or really maybe in the WWE as far as the main roster goes than Braun right now.
Patrick.
I think it's going to be unanimous. Without a shadow of a doubt, Braun Strowman. He came pretty much the closest to killing Brock, which is an amazing feat in and of itself. And this was the most dominant someone had looked against Brock since that cluster at Survivor Series last year with Goldberg. So without a shadow of a doubt, Braun Strowman.
I'm going to make it 3 for 3. My MVP is Braun Strowman. Like I said earlier when I was discussing the match, there's just something innately fun about watching him kill bitches.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, if you're asking me my opinion, you know, I think we all overlooked a certain guy, and that's Elias. I mean, come on.
No,
he got to do two songs tonight. Not just one. He got to do two songs. But, no, you guys are completely right. Unanimous is the right terminology because, I mean, Braun Strowman looked amazing. I think, you know, people of all ages are looking and thinking about this match tonight and thinking about how amazing this guy is and how strong he is and probably how much they want to see what he's going to do on Raw. So that's always a good thing, and I'm excited for Braun Strowman, man. He's on an upwards, you know, tilt.
Absolutely. I think that's definitely the other thing, too, that you kind of want to mention in regards to Strowman tonight is that even to the casual fan tonight, you had to see something special in Strowman tonight just by the simple way that he dominated the other three men in this contest for the vast majority of it.
Mm-hmm. So, well, there you go. That pretty much wraps everything up for us, guys. I mean, that is SummerSlam 2017. I think, you know, everybody got pretty much everything we thought. But, of course, now what you'll have to do is go check out the Raw shows that we do. And here comes the portion where we're going to plug a few things. And Paul and I do a Raw review for the W2M. But, you know, Harry, you do your own show about Raw. Why don't you tell people about it, where they can find it?
Yes Wrestling Radio through YesWrestling.com and in association with the Yes Wrestling Facebook page. We bring the Raw reaction to you, myself and 411 Mania's Tony Acero, in addition to our third man, a guy very familiar to the W2M Network, Robert Taylor. We bring the Raw reaction immediately following Raw on Monday nights at 11:30 p.m. Eastern. We're usually on the air for about an hour and a half, breaking down the show. And then for the pay-per-views and stuff, we do our predictions and everything there. Like this past Monday before SummerSlam, we did basically quick hits for Raw, and then we did the rest of the show we dedicated to our predictions.
Awesome. And, you know, Patrick, you know, you and Harry do this week in and week out. Why don't you tell them about the Wrestling Unwrapped?
I wish I could say week in and week out. August has been a little bit of a weird month for us. But Harry and I are actually technically not done with SummerSlam just yet, as we are covering all of the August 98 Big Three pay-per-views. ECW Heatwave 98 already up in the archives. However, we still have WCW Road Wild, headlined by Jay Leno and DDP versus Hogan and Bischoff. And then we finish with more Slam, as we will finish with 1998 SummerSlam, headlined by The Highway to Hell, Steve Austin, and The Undertaker.
Ooh. See, man, I want to go back to that time. I can't. I just want to rewatch those Tonight shows with Jay Leno and the NWO so bad. I got to do that sometime on YouTube.
See, I needed the excuse to go back and watch the Triple H and Rock ladder match.
That whole show is really fun. I like the opener on that one too.
Yeah.
you mean Val Venus and Jeff Jarrett, or not Val Venus? Val Venus and D'Lo Brown.
Yeah, with the whole chest D'Lo protector Brown gimmick.
D'Lo's chest protector gimmick was pretty awesome. I think D'Lo's probably my second favorite European champion of all time behind Al Snow.
That's awesome. Yeah, there you go, guys, with that. One last thing I want Paul to plug here. Paul, you know, we got the Mae Young Classic. Why don't you tell the people about this awesome podcast we got going on about it?
Yeah, before we did this, myself, Patrick, and Harry, we all sat down. We broke down the first round for the Mae Young Classic. We gave our predictions. We talked about the competitors. We talked about the bracketology episode. Basically, it's a little bit over an hour of us having a good time talking about something we all really enjoy, and that's women's wrestling. And if you're curious at all about anybody that's in that tournament, or, you know, you just like hearing us talk for whatever reason, it is currently up on our Spreaker page, on W2Mnet, on everywhere we are. So go check it out, guys.
Yeah, for sure. And hey, you know, make sure you go check out everything else over there on the W2Mnet.com, including Wrestling to the Max, where you can hear more of my dirty mouth. But anyway, Patrick, what were you going to say? I thought someone was going to say something. I thought I cut somebody off. So, but anyway, all right. Well, you know, of course, once again, W2Mnet.com. Don't forget to go check it out. Subscribe, rate, and review over at Wrestling to the Max, Wrestling Unwrapped as well. And all those great shows, you can go to the W2M Network and get them all at one point and one time with one push of the subscribe button. And, of course, we thank you for joining us. Wrestling Unwrapped to the Max was a blast tonight, and we will catch you guys down the road.
Have a good one, guys.
See you.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.